So for a number of weeks we've been studying the life of Jacob. We're now in the last study this evening. And I have three passages that I want to look at this evening. Let me just begin by asking a question. What sort of testimony do you think you would like to leave when your time comes to leave this earth? It's a question I think it's good for us to ask, because whatever age we are, unless the Lord returns, we will at some point leave this earth and go to be with the Lord in heaven. And it is a question worth asking. What do I want people to say about me when I've gone? And I don't mean at the funeral service where everybody says very good things and nobody ever says anything negative. What I mean is when people are being brutally honest, you know, they're discussing the fact that you're gone and you're no longer, what do I want them to say about me? What kind of testimony do I want to leave when I go? Of course, I ask that question because we're looking at Jacob's death this evening. And there are three things I want us to see about Jacob's last few years that are both very challenging and very encouraging. And I'm putting this out as a kind of a challenge. And I'm saying, here is Jacob's example. Okay, let's take his example and let's seek to leave this earth with a similar testimony. I say it's an encouragement because you remember many weeks ago when we began the study of Jacob and the first two incidents where he takes the birthright from his brother, deceives his brother, or rather exploits his brother and takes his birthright and then deceives his father and takes the blessing. So the beginning is not so great. But today we're going to be looking at his last few years, possibly last few months. And the ending is great. And that's a great encouragement that even those who don't start the Christian life well can actually finish really, really well, because the grace of God allows us and enables us to do that. Now, I want to suggest that the first thing we should aim for is that we should be a blessing to the unsaved people of this world. We should be a blessing to the unsaved people of this world. In other words, after we've gone, wouldn't it be great if those who are not converted would say, that person was a blessing. That person added to my life. That person did things that actually made my life better. And the reason I say that is because if we look at chapter 47, of course we're looking at Genesis, and there are three passages in Genesis that I want us to look at. Let's start with chapter 47. And I want us to look at it from verse 7. Genesis 47 verse 7. Jacob is now in Egypt. And it says in verse 7, then Joseph brought in Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many are the days of your years, of the years of your life? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. It's a very moving passage. Joseph is second in command. He and Pharaoh have a very close working relationship. Possibly they see each other every day because they're planning state affairs. It's a time of famine. There have been the years of plenty. There is now the years of famine. there's starvation in the land. So no doubt the matters of government are prominent, and these two men probably meet. And one day, Joseph says to Pharaoh, I'd like you to meet my father. Of course, Pharaoh knows that Joseph's father, Jacob, has come from Canaan and is now living in Goshen in Egypt. And one day Joseph says to him, I'd like you to meet my father, Jacob. And Pharaoh says, of course I want to meet him. You know, he's your father. You hadn't seen him for over 20 years. You've now been reunited to him. And you've talked about him. And I'd like to meet this man. And so Joseph brings in Jacob. And you notice the first thing that Jacob does. It says there, verse 7, Joseph brought in Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. I don't know exactly what he did, but the Hebrew way was to raise the hand and to speak some words of blessing. May the Lord bless you and be with you. May the Lord guide you and be gracious to you. And so on, words like that. Later in Numbers you have the Aaronic blessing. And I think that was a kind of blessing that was already in use. And Moses said to the priests, you will bless the people of Israel with this blessing. Whatever it was, he spoke words of blessing. Now, it's a remarkable thing, because in that conversation, Pharaoh says to Jacob, how long have you lived? And Jacob says, well, I've lived 130 years. And he says, few and evil have been the days of my years of life. Few, meaning I haven't lived as long as my grandfather Abraham or my father Isaac. And it is true, life was getting shorter on earth, right from the early chapters. And by the time we come to Jacob, he was 130, and it gets shorter and shorter. So he says, my days haven't been as long as those of Abraham and those of Isaac. But he also says, evil have been the days. Because as we've seen in our study in Jacob's life, his life has been full of difficulties. You know, he had to leave his father and mother and go and live with his uncle Laban. And he was there for many years, and his mother died in the meantime, so he never saw his mother again. He came back to the land, and he had to meet with his brother Esau. That was a very distressing time for him, although it didn't turn out as bad as he thought. And then he settled in Shechem, and the son of Shechem, or Shechem himself, raped his daughter Dinah, and then his sons killed all the men of Shechem, and so he had to leave there. And he had to go elsewhere. So there were all these very, very great difficulties. And then Joseph disappeared. And for over 20 years, he thought Joseph was dead, his favorite son. So his life hadn't been a good one. There had been many, many difficulties in his life. But, as I've said before, nothing happens by chance or accident in our life. And these things don't happen because the devil has snatched control. God allows these things for our good. And through all these trials, all these difficulties, Jacob is maturing as a child of God. He starts out as this young man who exploits his brother and takes the birthright, deceives his father and takes the blessing. He starts out like that, but then the trials come, and the trials have been designed by God. Everything that happened in his life, designed by God. This is a great mystery, and we can't understand it. And we actually don't need to understand it. And according to Romans chapter 9, we shouldn't even ask, why did God do this? Okay? In Romans 9, Paul raises this kind of issue, and Paul says, you may ask the question, well, why does God do all these things in my life? And Paul says, who are you, O man, to ask God these questions? Okay? And really, the Bible is saying, don't go into all the questions about, why did this happen in my life? Why did that happen in my life? We have to accept things by faith. God loves us. And God is at work in us, shaping us for heaven. And God is maturing us. And God is rubbing off the rough edges. And God is preparing us for that day. When you read Jesus' prayer in Matthew, in John 17, Jesus says to his Father, I desire that where I am, they may be also. I wonder if you've ever thought of this. As your Savior sits at the right hand of the Father, what is on his heart? On his heart, he is waiting impatiently for the day you will enter heaven. Have you ever thought of that? He loves you. And he loves you so much, he can't wait for the day when you will be prepared, ready, and enter heaven so that he can hug you and welcome you and then enter into the enjoyment of eternity with you. You know Isaiah chapter 53, okay? And we know the opening verses of Isaiah chapter 53 when he talks about, he was a dry root and so on. He had no comeliness about him, and the Lord has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. We all like sheep have gone astray, every one of us has gone his own way, and so on. But if you read on in Isaiah 53, at the end it says, he shall see the travail of his soul and be satisfied. Do you know that's what it says in Isaiah chapter 53? He shall see the outcome of his trials. He will see what he suffered for. All his sufferings here on earth, all those insults, all those beatings, the spitting on his face and the crown of thorns on his head and the mocking and the mock trial and then the crucifixion, all those sufferings. And you will enter heaven and Jesus will see you and he will smile because he will say, it was all worth it. It was for you. It was so that you would enter heaven. Now, he wants you in heaven prepared. You can't enter heaven as you are today. We have sin in us. We have sinful habits. We have sinful thoughts. We are imperfect. So those imperfections have to be removed. And one of the things that God uses, not the only thing, one of the things he uses is our trials. And Joseph is one of the great examples in the Bible of this, because Joseph begins by exploiting his brother and by deceiving his father. Those who are nearest to him, those who are dearest to him, those whom he loves, his twin brother, special relationship between twins, his twin brother he exploits, his father he deceives. So Joseph starts out as this not at all a nice young man, a man who's prepared to exploit those who are closest to him. But he dies a man willing to bless one who is the furthest distance from him, Pharaoh, an idolater. No interest in the worship of God. Joseph has been there many years. Joseph has worked closely with Pharaoh. Pharaoh has seen Joseph's life. Pharaoh shows no interest in the God of Israel. This happens. You know this happens in our lives. We live a holy life in your place of work, in your family, and your family members, your work colleagues, they see a godly life. No interest. Well, that's the blindness of sin. That's Satan. That's not your fault. So Pharaoh has no interest in the things of God. You never read in any of these passages Pharaoh ever shows any interest in the things of God. But Jacob blesses Pharaoh because God has shaped him and God has prepared him. And what a wonderful testimony that Jacob left this earth a man of blessing to those who are outside of God's kingdom. He left blessing Pharaoh. And you can see the testimony of that in verse 11. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. So although Pharaoh showed no interest, Pharaoh obviously was impressed by Jacob and by Joseph. And Pharaoh says to them, have the best of the land. They're immigrants, they're foreigners. And you know, you can imagine his people saying, hey, there's a famine, and these people are foreigners, and you're giving them the best of our land. But he does. Okay, he commands this. Give these people the best of the land. So how should we seek to leave this earth? Can I suggest this? Do all that you can to be a blessing to those who are not believers, even those who may never show any interest in the Christian faith. Be a kind, gracious kind of person, not hard, harsh, critical, or anything like that. Always gracious, always kind, and be a blessing to those who are not believers. A second thing in the life of Jacob, and I don't know if this will surprise you, but I've been looking at it today, and I find this a great challenge. Be a blessing to those who are much younger than you, especially children. Why do I say that? Because of chapter 48. Okay. In 47, he blesses Pharaoh. In 48, he blesses two young children. He hasn't blessed his own sons yet. That comes in 49. But in 48, Joseph comes to visit him with Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, they couldn't have been older than 14. We can't work out the dates. We don't know the exact age. It had to be younger than 14. Okay. Because Joseph married Asenath when he became prime minister. After he became prime minister, there were 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And it was during that time that his sons were born. They were possibly under seven. I guess they were 5 and 6, something like that, these two boys. So Joseph brings his two sons to him. And I'll just read from verse 8 of chapter 48. When Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, "Who are these?" And Joseph said to his father, "These are my sons, whom God has given me here." And he said, "Bring them to me, please, that I may bless them." Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. So Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face, and behold, God has let me see your offspring also." Isn't that a lovely testimony to the grace of God? I never expected to see Joseph. I end up seeing Joseph and his sons. What a lovely testimony. Then Joseph removed them from his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand. And he brought them near him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on that right hand, stretched out his head on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on the head of Manasseh, crossing his hands, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my days long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys, and in them let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." He basically adopts them as his own sons, because from this point onwards, when we talk about the sons of Jacob, Ephraim and Manasseh are mentioned. Joseph isn't mentioned, but Ephraim and Manasseh are, because Joseph got a double blessing. When the land was divided, Ephraim and Manasseh each got a piece of land. So it was divided into 12, because the Levites didn't get any land. So the land should have been divided among 11, because there were 12 sons. The Levites didn't get land, but it was divided into 12. Joseph's sons each got, so Joseph had two portions. And that blessing led them, right at the end of verse 16, let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. When you look at Israel's history, you trace it through the Old Testament, there were two tribes that were the largest and the most dominant. Judah, of course, and Ephraim. Ephraim was one of the largest tribes in Israel. Joshua was an Ephraimite, the man who led Israel into the promised land, fought all those battles, secured the promised land, divided among the 12 tribes, was of the tribe of Ephraim. After Solomon, when the kingdom split, the division was actually between Judah and Ephraim. Solomon's son Rehoboam, of course, was of the tribe of Judah. Jeroboam, who opposed him and was a ruler of the northern kingdom, was an Ephraimite. Those were the two big tribes. So God did listen to his prayer, and God did bless Ephraim, the younger of the two, and God did make him into a great nation. But the point I'm making in this passage, how interesting, and I must say, I found this very challenging. Jacob, as he leaves this earth, is thinking about the younger generation. He's thinking about the children, and he gets the children, and he pronounces blessing upon them. And I don't know if I'm stretching the application too much. I don't think I am. You know, as we get older, and, you know, I like church to be done in this way, and I like these hymns to be sung, and I like services to be done like this, and and so on. Well, okay, that's fine, and God honors that, and we all have a right to, you know, have our say. I fully accept that. But I just find this a great challenge, that here is this old man, a godly, godly man whom God has shaped and molded, who thinks about the younger generation and pronounces blessing upon them. Wouldn't it be lovely if later generations said, the older generation didn't think of themselves, they thought of us when they planned church and when they planned songs and services and so on. Wouldn't that be a great thing? You know, if the older generation who knew their time was short and were passing thought, no, let's think about the younger ones because they are going to inherit the church. And let's think about how they will feel about church life and so on. This is something that has challenged me, particularly throughout this process of, you know, should we stay or should we move? And in one deacon's meeting, I did express a view that the younger members of the church should have more votes than the older. Now, I know our constitution doesn't allow that. Okay. But I did, honestly, I did wonder that. Should those who are of a certain younger age, should they be given double weighting on their votes? Actually, during the Brexit, I thought that, you know. Because, sorry to get into political controversy here, but, you know, I did think, because I discussed Brexit with my children, and I thought, they are going to face the future of my decision. And it didn't quite seem fair to me that I make a decision, and they are landed with the consequences of that. Now, okay, I'm a British citizen, I have a right to vote, and I'm still only 60, I may still have another 20-odd years, but they have 40, 60 years here. You know, and it is something I think we should just think about. We should think about the future generations when we're thinking about church. And it just occurred to me as I read this that Jacob left this world blessing children. There aren't many passages in the Bible where old men bless children. Interesting. Children were not, you know, they were seen and not heard. Even in Jesus' time, and Jesus' time was 2,000 years later, when Jesus blessed, when children came to Jesus, people, you know, don't bring your children. He's the great rabbi. He's a great teacher. You're bringing your children. Jesus said, let the children come to me, for to such as thus the kingdom belongs. And he blessed them. Now, it was an unusual thing. Rabbis didn't bless children. Old men didn't bless children. You'd be hard-pushed to find passages in the Old Testament where an old man on his deathbed brings young children, 5, 6 year old, and blesses them. But Jacob does. Isn't that an interesting testimony? So Jacob blesses Pharaoh, a complete outsider, unsaved. Jacob blesses young children. And then thirdly, Jacob blesses Judah. I want us to look at 49 and verses 8 to 12. 49 and verses 8 to 12. I'm just going to pick one son. He's blessing all his sons in the passage. I'm just going to pick on Judah, okay? So, 8 to 12. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion's cub. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He stooped down, he crouched as a lion and as a lioness. Who dares rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until tribute comes to him, or the one to whom it belongs comes. It's a difficult Hebrew phrase. And to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. Binding his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine, he has washed his garments in wine and his vesture in the blood of grapes. His eyes are darker than wine and his teeth whiter than milk. So he's pronouncing blessing here upon Judah. Of course, it's a messianic blessing. He's telling him about Christ. And he's saying to Judah that the long-promised Messiah that God prophesied in the Garden of Eden, Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, that the ark was a type of, and all the prophecies, when God in Genesis 12 say to Abraham, the promises are for you and for your son. That son is Christ. Galatians 3 tells us that. All these prophecies, Jacob says to Judah, he will come from you. Now, who was Judah? Well, Judah was not an outstandingly godly man. Judah was an up-and-down Christian like all of us. Okay? You know, when the time came, when Joseph went out to look for his brothers and they planned to kill him and then they planned to sell him, do you know Judah led all that? Judah was the main person. You read the passage. Okay, it was Judah who said, let's kill him. It was Judah who said, why should we kill him when we can make money out of him? Here are some Ishmaelite slave traders. Let's sell him as a slave. It was Judah who led his brothers into this. Okay, you also probably know a horrible incident in Judah's history when during shearing time, Judah went looking for a prostitute. And it's a complicated story, but his daughter-in-law dressed herself up as a prostitute and offered herself to him, and he slept with her and had twins by her. Okay, you know this incident, Judah and Hiram and Tamar and so on. They're all there in the Bible. So Judah was that sort of character. Judah also had good things about him. When Joseph said to his brothers, before he revealed himself, he said, I'm going to keep Benjamin, the youngest. Go back to your father. And Judah said, no, keep me. If Benjamin doesn't go back, my father will die. So Judah was capable of heroic acts of faith, but Judah was also capable of very great sin. And yet, Jacob blesses Judah. You know, we can judge Christians and we can say, oh, certain Christians are good men and good women and I'll be kind to them, and others annoy me and others are, you know, up and down and mixed in their Christian faith and confused and so on. And why should I bother to be nice to them? But Jacob blessed Judah. He left this earth blessing this son of his who had committed dreadful sin. Judah was primarily responsible for him missing Joseph for more than 20 years. It was Judah who sold Joseph, into slavery. And yet, Jacob blesses him. It doesn't matter who our fellow Christians are. It doesn't matter whether they are sinful and mixed up and, you know, have sinful habits and so on. Why can't we say to ourselves, I will live my life seeking to be a blessing to every one of God's children? Why do we have to have critical language and harsh language and difficult people? And why do we have to always be tough on others and cruel to others? Why do Christians behave like this? What is wrong with being kind, gracious, merciful, and so on to other people? Surely that's the Christian way. Well, that challenged me today. He blessed Pharaoh, he blessed Ephraim and Manasseh, and he blessed Judah. And then he died.